I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, books with a Cape and Islands theme. And with us this morning is Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Mary Fran Buckley from Eight Cousins Bookstore in Falmouth. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right. You've got. We're going back in time for your first book.
We are starting back in time because I think it's really interesting to see how the Cape has been portrayed over the decades. And I started researching for this show by searching our digital version of the Falmouth Enterprise. I thought, you know, surely at some point they talked about summer books or something. So, and I found this little article from the July 1936, and just keep in mind, this is 1936, because of some of the topics in the book are not necessarily things that would be written about today. And in this little article, it was called One Cape Cod Book. And the article itself is very funny. It starts in its booklet published to entice strangers to Cape Cod, the advancement plan incorporates a directory. In the directory is the brief listing books, and this is Cape Cod by Eleanor Early. What, the stranger may ask, can there be to see in a land which in all its years has inspired but one book? What sterile soil to the imagination Cape Cod Sands must be. How dull its history, how uninteresting its folklore and its scenery. If the stranger is shrewd enough, he may examine the directory more closely. He will discover that, according to the directory, there is but one Cape Cod lawyer. And but one dentist, that there are apparently three physicians to serve the length and breadth of the Cape. He may then begin to suspect that there is something wrong with the directory. But what lost opportunity to stir strangers with a desire to see and know Cape Cod is represented by the solitary reference under books. What testimony to ingratitude and forgetfulness the isolated entry speaks! Exclamation point. Two guidebooks to the Cape have been published this year, where only one is offered to the advancement plan audience. The most comprehensive guide of all, Dean Tarbell's Cape Cod Ahoy, is consigned to oblivion despite its several editions. Guidebooks, however, aren't the literature of the Cape. This would be a sorry country indeed if it had nothing more interesting written about it. From the apparently forgotten ranks of Cape authors, let us recall Elizabeth Rennyard, whose Narrow Land will always be a fascinating source book for matters of Cape Cod. And he goes on to talk about all these other authors and books that have been written by Cape Cod authors, and this is 1936. So his last paragraph is, forgotten this legion of writers about Cape Cod! Exclamation point. Well, hardly. Their influence is all about us today. We can easily hear their mocking laughter at the directory of Cape Cod books, which lists one work about Cape Cod. So this led me to my first book, which is, in fact, the book that that little directory mentioned called And This Is Cape Cod by Eleanor Early. And I again reiterate that this book is not, it's of its time. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of sort of sexist and racist comments in the course of this book. However, it also has some delightful things to write about the various villages. And it starts by saying, and each chapter sort of covers one town on the Cape. And it starts, if you love the sea and things that are old, if you love nice little houses and all kinds of flowers, then you should go to Cape Cod. So, and then here's just a little bit of the description of the town of Falmouth. Again, remind yourself that this is being written in the 30s. Falmouth is filled with all sorts of people, scientists, antiquarians, stenographers, millionaires, fishermen, and rose growers. Here are great laboratories where biologists study marine life and the reproduction of the species. Here is the smartest nightclub on the Cape. And here is the finest rose garden in America. In Falmouth, there are three lovely beaches and 1,000 pretty girls who don't know oceanography from meteorology.
Oh, my goodness.
But agree that the proper study of mankind is man and do their homework in the moonlight. If your delight is in fish, antiques, cocktails, sports, or romance, Falmouth practically guarantees satisfaction.
Oh, my goodness.
So a little time travel this morning with And This Is Cape Cod.
Leave by it to you
Eleanor
to find
Early.
These little gems.
I love this. I love this book. I want to read the whole thing. I have yet to get to do that. But what fun. And how time. And I want to know, like, what was that great nightclub that
I know,
no
I was going to ask you that. Does it say?
It does not say. And three beaches? Like, how did they come up with three beaches? There are, I don't know how many beaches in Falmouth. So
more than three.
Very interesting time travel.
Your first book, Mary Kay.
Okay. Well, I'm moving along to a more recent time when the Cape is crowded. And
there's more than three doctors.
And there are more than three doctors at this point. This book is probably our second bestseller at the bookstore after Goodnight Cape Cod for the summer, and it is The Inevitable Guest, a survival guide to being company and having company on Cape Cod by Marcia Monblow. And it's one that homeowners would want to have numerous copies scattered throughout the house, maybe on the nightstand in your guest room or on the coffee table. But it is very much tongue-in-cheek, and she's a fun person to talk to, and it is dedicated to the old-timers, a wondrous breed with strong hands, good humor, big hearts, and small houses. We miss them. So one of the first examples I'm going to use is for homeowners, people who live on Cape Cod, and it is called On Stopping By. Few words are more frightening to a Cape Codder than stop and by, particularly when used together, as in the following example. We've been in Maine for 2 weeks, and we thought we'd like to stop by on the way home. Well, it's time to look at your map. Draw a line from Maine to Alabama, one from New Hampshire to Virginia, and another from Gloucester to Newark. Do you see Cape Cod anywhere along those lines? The correct answer is no. Cape Cod is not on the way to any place. It is a side trip, a day trip, or wide loop, but nobody stops by on the way. So she also has advice for visitors on what to wear. Pack light, but not so light that you have to do a wash every 15 minutes. Bring clothes for hot weather, warm weather, cold weather, and rain. That's one day. And I think this past Monday is an example of that.
Exactly.
When it was sunny, then it was raining. So good advice, lots of fun, a lot of conversation.
I remember when that book came. That is it's funny book.
It
yeah.
Is.
It's, yeah. Jill?
Well, I was pleased to rediscover a book that was written by Anthony Bourdain. He is, of course, very much in the news right now, and I'm sure everybody misses him very much. But he did a wonderful book that includes his initial restaurant work in Provincetown. And the book is called Kitchen Confidential, Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly by Anthony Bourdain. And he writes so well of life in the kitchen. And again, this is sort of in the 70s. So it is not necessarily how it is now. I have no idea how it is now. But he also does great descriptions of Provincetown itself. He writes, Provincetown was and is essentially a small Portuguese fishing village all the way out on the fish-hooked tip of the Cape. And I just love that description of that fish-hooked tip. During the summer months, however, it becomes Times Square, Christopher Street by the sea. This was the 70s. Remember, so factor that in when you conjure up the image of a once quaint New England port town clogged with tourists, day trippers, hippies, drifters, lobster poachers, slutty chicks, dopers, refugees from Key West, and thousands upon thousands of energetically cruising gay men. For a rootless young man with sensualist inclinations, it was the perfect getaway. And he talks also about the food in Provincetown. In a chapter called Food is Pain, he writes, I don't want you to think that everything up to this point was about fornication, free booze, and ready access to drugs. I should recall for you the delights of Portuguese squid stew, of Wellfleet oysters on the half shell, New England clam chowder, of greasy, wonderful fire red chorizo sausages, kale soup, and a night when the striped bass jumped right out of the water and on to Cape Cod's dinner tables. And he's talking about he goes on to talk about culinary culture, and there really was no culinary culture in Provincetown in 1974. But he does mention one chef that he was particularly inspired by, and that fellow's name was Howard Mitchum. And he describes Howard Mitchum as the sole name chef in town, 50-ish, furiously alcoholic and stone deaf, the result of a childhood accident with fireworks. Howard could be seen most nights after work, holding up the fishermen's bars or lurching about town, shouting incomprehensibly. He liked to sing as well. Though drunk most of the time and difficult to understand, Howard was a revered elder statesman of Cape Cod cookery, a respected chef of a very busy restaurant, and the author of two very highly regarded cookbooks. And one of those cookbooks is called Provincetown Seafood Cookbook by Howard Mitchum. And I was delighted to see it is on our shelf. And you were saying that it's about to be reprinted. Is that right?
Reissued? By Random House.
By yes. Random House. Yeah. One of the great things about, I mean, there are a lot of great things, but he has this fabulous intro, which talks all about the history of Provincetown and fishing in Provincetown. It is also, I don't know if the new edition will have as many illustrations as this one does.
It's supposed to.
Because it's also full of fabulous illustrations. And may I say, the illustrator doesn't seem to get any credit in this book. I don't know why, because there are lots of great pictures. He talks about the coming of the Portuguese, and then it's filled with recipes. And he has, for example, here's just a little bit on a chowder is a, which begins, because before every recipe, there's a story. And this begins, everybody on Cape Cod has his own ideas about how to make clam chowder. Chowder is like people. Sometimes it's very good, and sometimes it's plain lousy. It's okay to go dashing off on experimental tangents, but sooner or later, you'll realize that the hidebound method of the old time Cape Codders is the best. The Provincetown quahog chowder recipe given below is over 100 years old, but it's just as good today as on the day it was written.
Look at the picture of him on the back.
Yes, he looks a little scary, doesn't he?
Does.
The photo,
and stern.
Not to mention he's got a very large knife in his hand. So that is the Provincetown Seafood Cookbook by Howard Mitchum and Kitchen Confidential, Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly by the late Anthony Bourdain.
All righty. What have you got, my friend?
Well, mine's not quite as adventurous as that, but it makes a lovely gift. I've given it to new residents on the Cape, and it's Catherine Kleekamp's Cape Cod, Where Beauty and History Meet. And in it are reproductions of her oil paintings as well as historic photos. And what's nice about it is they're short chapters, descriptions on everything from the Cape Cod League Baseball, Woods Hole, Oceanographic Institution, Marine Biological Laboratory, sailing, fishing, and Cape Cod recipes. And of course she has clam chowder in there, as they all do. I swear every cookbook for New England has that.
It should, yeah.
And one of the things that she, one of the quotes in it, in talking about Cape Cod, is, "The world of strife seems far away. It must have been a kindly God who shaped the sands of old Cape Cod." Ferdinand Lane, and that is in his book, An Old Cape Cod. But I recommend this book very highly. It's beautiful. I know that the author recommends the second edition.
Well, and I have to tell you a funny story about that book, which is the author sent me a reference question for that book because she was looking. Somebody had given her this quote that supposedly was from Moby Dick and had to do with cranberries. I spent months researching that quote. I wrote a whole blog about it because, in fact, the word cranberries does not show up in Moby Dick anywhere ever. And I finally decided the one place it had been seen was at the Ocean Spray Cranberry Museum, if any of you remember that. It used to be in Plymouth, then it got moved to Carver. And they had a plaque in that museum with a quote from Melville mentioning cranberries, which I think was really good PR on their part. But I haven't actually been able to track down the plaque. So if anyone knows where that plaque is, no cranberries in Moby Dick.
Or if you have something you'd like to add to our list this morning, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. Today we're talking about books with a Cape and Islands theme with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Mary Fran Buckley from Eight Cousins Bookstore in Falmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have a suggestion for our list. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Marilyn is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Marilyn.
I have an answer to two things that you mentioned.
Okay.
Hi, Jill, and hi, Mary Fran. I know the name of the nightclub that was
Great, Marilyn. You're coming through for us.
Okay,
that's great.
What was it?
And I know that because my last name is Zax, and at 2 in the morning, I would get called, hello, is this Zax's place, and are you still open? It was
terrific.
A nightclub with apparently a generous view of the women that were there, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And the other fact of note is that the terrific Rose Garden was in Quissett on the Webster Estate that used to have a house that looked like a Norman castle with blue turrets.
Wow.
And our great-grandmother didn't feel that a trip to Falmouth was complete unless she walked through the Rose Garden that had a ship's prow at the end with a beautiful Indian maiden and another kind of perennial garden.
Wow. Marilyn, where was Vax? Where was it?
It's not far from the golf course.
Hmm.
It now has a very modern house. The garage of the original estate is on the land side, and it still has the blue turrets.
Hmm.
And the garden was, as you face the water, on the left. And it had every kind of rose you could ever imagine.
Right, yeah. But the nightclub, where was the nightclub?
I think that it was near the Mashpee line.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, when my kids were little, I had pencils printed up that said Zach's Place.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, and Jill, you do good work. It's fun to hear you on the radio.
Right. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for calling, Marilyn. Bye-bye. And we have an email from Andrew who says, I'm a year-round Cape Cod resident and read a terrific Cape novel this year. It's called The News from the End of the World by Emily Jean Miller, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. It takes place here in the off-season and really gives you a great feel for what the place is like when the tourists leave. Thanks, Andrew. That's a good suggestion. We'll add that to our list. And if you are trying to scribble down all the titles we're talking about, not to worry. We will have a link later on today. Jill will compile all the titles we talk about for us, and we'll have a link to that later on up on our website, capeandislands.org. What's your next book, Jill?
Well, I think it's time to move to the Vineyard for the next one. We've been doing a little bit of the Cape. Now let's move to the Martha's Vineyard. And I have with me a book I just adore for a lot of different reasons. It's called Martha's Vineyard, Isle of Dreams by Susan Branch. And if you don't know Susan Branch, she's been around for a long time. She started her cookbook is the recipe for this French toast, orange French toast I use every Christmas. She has lots of great recipes, but she also has written three volumes of her memoir. But when Susan Branch writes something, it is not just about the writing. The writing is lovely, but it's really about everything around the writing because she is a fabulous illustrator. So she draws everything. And I was trying to describe what this book is like. And I started putting a list together of all the things this book is. It is her story of her moving from California to the Vineyard. So that after she was in the middle of a divorce, she was just getting divorced from her first husband, and she moves to the Vineyard in like March, like the worst possible month you can move to the Vineyard. But she falls in love with the place. She had some connection already, and she's supposed to be staying there for 3 weeks. And after 3 days, she buys a little cottage, you know, because she loves it so much. But this book it's part Bartlett's Familiar Quotations. It's part cookbook. It's part journal. It's part scrapbook. It's part memoir. And it's part art project. Because she puts in here all of her illustrations, as well as all kinds of fabulous little quotes. In fact, in the house in which this, I love this part because she talks about how when she buys this little house, she goes into the attic because she nothing's been cleaned out. It's somebody died and it's now, I think somebody died. I can't remember exactly how she got the house, but she buys the house and she goes to look at the upstairs, and what does she find but a Bartlett's familiar quotations upstairs in the house. And so there are illustrations of her illustrations. There are things that she's taken photos of that are from her scrapbooks. There are quotations from everybody, from Brothers Grimm to Edith Wharton throughout the book. And it is just a spectacularly beautiful book. And what's really interesting as well is that she originally, I think it was Little Brown, was originally publishing her cookbooks, but then she decided to self-publish so that she could get the quality that she wanted. And she's been doing great with that. And the most recent thing is apparently one of these books is going to be turned into either a film or a TV series. So that's very exciting as well. But this particular one is Martha's Vineyard, Isle of Dreams by Susan Branch, but pick up any of them. They're all beautiful and great recipes as well.
And I think she has calendars, too, which are beautifully illustrated.
That's right. Yeah. Also full of quotations.
Also, yeah. Yes.
That seems to be a new thing, self-publishing. Cynthia Riggs is self-publishing.
That's
too.
Right. Yes. That's
another
right.
Author.
And she has a new book.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. All right. What's your next one, Mary?
Well,
Jane?
I'm going way back in time, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Henry David Thoreau's Cape Cod, which I read many years ago before I lived on Cape Cod. And I did love the descriptions, but it was the people he met. And that's what stayed in my mind were the lightkeepers, the fishermen, the people out on the Cape. And there is such an allure to Cape Cod. And one of the things that Thoreau says is that when you stand with your back to the country, it puts all of America behind you, as you see Cape Cod sticking out. So he did his walk. Robert Finch, who listeners at WCAI would recognize very much, has put his essays together in a book called The Outer Beach, a 1,000-mile walk on Cape Cod's Atlantic shore. Not a 1,000-mile walk that he did at once, but over the course of 50 years living on Cape Cod. And his observations are wonderful. Mm-hmm. He looks at the minutest things. He's observant. He loves the birds, shipwrecks, everything. Even if you never traveled on Cape Cod, you'd feel like you'd been there after reading his essays. Each of the chapters is done for a beach. The outer beach is the stretch of land on Cape Cod that faces the Atlantic Ocean, so it does get some of the most tempestuous weather. And his writing is just so good. And I just like one of the quotes he has about writing on the beaches: "No other place I know sears the heart with such a constant juxtaposition of pleasure and pain, of beauty being born and destroyed in the same moment." He also has a sense of humor. And one of the essays I loved, he was walking out on the beach and he met this couple who had been wandering and were complaining because they didn't have cell phone service. They were hoping to call Uber to get them back to where they were staying. So he talks to people. They're wonderful observations. Yeah. So it's The Outer Beach by Robert Finch.
And, you know, you're talking about his he notices everything.
Everything.
So even if you have been to these beaches, you will see it through new eyes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Jill?
Well, I've got a couple of picture books, and we're going off to Nantucket now with a picture book, which came out. I had never seen this before, but I asked our children's librarian, do you have any good picture books about the Cape? And she gave me two, and one of them is Comets, Nine Lives, written and illustrated by Jan Brett. Now, I know Jan Brett. I've seen lots of her books. She writes beautiful books, beautiful illustrations. But this actually came out in 1996. I don't know if it's still in print or not. We're having no...
Yes.
Mary Fran is saying yes. She's nodding her head, but she's saying yes. And it is so beautifully done. And it begins with this cat who lives on Nantucket. And the first page is Comet was born 30 miles out to sea on Nantucket Island. He grew up wandering all over the island, staying a few days here and a few days there. And she goes through, this cat goes through lives very quickly. So there are, the cat goes through eight lives in the length of the picture book. There's also this beautiful illustration where the cat goes to a bookstore. Maybe I should find myself a home. And he trotted into the bookstore and settled down on top of a stack of bestsellers. And it's a gorgeous illustration. And I love all the books that you, I mean, there's so much. It's much like Susan Branch in that there's all this detail within any one illustration. So this, it's got, you can see lighthouses, a book on lighthouses, a book on shells, a book on bottled ships, all of, there's so much to look at in every illustration. And there's also this sort of ongoing story that's happening on the side of the pages where there is this dog captain, lighthouse keeper, whose cat is trying to find a home, a friend. He's trying to find a friend for his cat. And of course, the life too is he is lost when all the books fall down on the poor little kitty. So beautiful book and really funny and lots to look at. It's called Comet's Nine Lives by Jan Brett. And the other picture book that I brought is called The Disappearing Island by Corinne DeMoss, illustrated by Ted Lewin, which is all about Wellfleet. And I have to say, it's great that in her acknowledgement, she thanks the Wellfleet Historical Society, the Wellfleet Public Library, and Cape Cod National Seashore. So she has done her research. It takes place with a grandmother who is taking her granddaughter out to look at this island that disappears in Wellfleet. And at the very end, the author has a whole note about that island, which is Billingsgate Island. And it's a really sweet story with the grandmother sharing this with her granddaughter. One little bit starts as, for my 9th birthday, my grandma gave me a small box. Inside was a perfect sand dollar and a note. The note said, to celebrate your birthday, we will voyage out to the disappearing island where I found this sand dollar when I was just your age. How can an island disappear? I asked. Grandma laughed. When I take you out to Billingsgate Island, Carrie, you'll see, she said. And that's what they do. And I love the portrayal of the grandmother in this. She's a great boater. She knows a lot of history. She is just a wonderful woman in this little picture book, and really shares the history, her history of the Wellfleet, the history of the island. They see remnants of fireplaces and such when they get to the island. Lovely book called The Disappearing Island by Corinne DeMoss and illustrated by Ted Lewin.
All right.
And I just wanted to add that the author will be at Eight Cousins. So if you go to our website, you can.
And may I just say, I didn't even know that. That's so great.
We're very excited to have her. So it should be a wonderful event. So go to our website.
When is that happening?
I'm not sure, but it is on our website.
Okay.
So another picture book, and I have to admit, I always go for the dog stories, is an old favorite called Riptide by Frances Ward Weller, illustrated beautifully by Robert Blake. And Riptide belongs to Zach, who's dying to have a dog. So he gets his puppy. It's like a golden retriever. They called him Riptide Windjammer, not Scout or Pal or any of the plain old names for dogs they knew. Riptide for a current that runs out to sea when sandbars crumble. Windjammer for a ship that runs before the wind. They didn't know he'd live up to his name. They didn't know the sea would call to Rip as it calls fishermen and sailors, surfers and sunbathers. The ocean always drummed Pied Piper songs for Zach's dog, Rip. And he's absolutely, they can't keep him off the beach. And the dog doesn't know he's not supposed to be there in the summer, not supposed to be in the water, and the lifeguards are after him. But further on in the book, Riptide becomes a hero. It ends happily, so you don't have to worry about reading it to kids. But the illustrations are just beautiful. They're so dynamic, and you just see, some of them show just the power of the sea and the dog fighting against it. So strong recommendation for Riptide.
Okay.
Well, I actually, when I was preparing for this, I asked the entire library staff to suggest books. You know, was there anything that you thought I should really talk about? And a name that came up repeatedly was Edward Gorey. And having worked with him in some of the plays, I am a huge fan, and he was a wonderful fellow. And just this past spring, they had a big retrospective. Actually, it wasn't so much a retrospective as it was showing his work at the Wadsworth Atheneum Museum of Art. But even more than that, what they did was they took the art that he had collected and had been hanging in his house and put that on display. And this catalog is, you know, catalogs can be really great. Art catalogs are really not so great. This one is just chock full of both photographs of him in all his wonder and gloriousness from his early years up to his later years, but also, and his illustrations, but also all this beautiful artwork that he had in his house. And it talks about his house and how he accumulated stuff, which he certainly did. His house is now a museum, so if you've some of his collections are still hanging out there. And there was a great write-up about this exhibit in the New York Review of Books by Jed Pearl. And he talks about Edward, and he says, "The artists I'm thinking about are far too sophisticated to be described as outsiders. They are, in fact, prototypical insiders with a deep grasp of the histories and traditions that are relevant to their art, but they delight in marshaling everything they know in the service of work." Edward did collect, you know, everything he was interested in. He was interested in soap operas. He was interested in Japanese films. He was interested in all kinds of writing. And he, of course, did a lot of theatrical designs as well. And the book has a great little going throughout the pages are pieces of Figbash acrobat alphabet. And if any of you are familiar with Figbash, a little creature that he used to draw all the time, and it's not quite clear what Figbash was, but there are lots of pictures of Figbash in here. There also are some wonderful photographs of the puppet heads that he would make when we were doing these puppet shows with him. He made the puppets. There are lots of photos of his cats, and just in general, all of the interesting artwork that he collected. There are photos of him in his studio with the cats. And there's much more in here than we have time to talk about, but it is called Gorey's World.
And I wonder why at the Wadsworth, of course, is in Hartford, Connecticut. I wonder why that same exhibit hasn't come here.
Well, right. And it was going somewhere else, but I don't know why it hasn't come here either. And maybe because they can't, it's too big for the house, I suspect, is what part of why that happened.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Christina, who's giving us a call from West Falmouth. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Mindy. I'm just calling because I've got a book that I wrote a couple of years ago called Sea is for Cape Cod. It has a frog on the front in the middle of a crabby bog, photographed by Steve Hayslip, who's a wonderful photographer from the Cape Cod Times. And I just thought it's a great book for all ages. It's a little four-line poem for early readers, and then the text that tells a lot about each one of the alphabet letters, and Steve's fabulous photographs. And I'm actually going to be doing a book signing at Eight Cousins on July 17th. So I just thought I'd call and mention that it's a great book for people to learn a lot about the Cape, and it's something that I think a lot of people find great as a souvenir to take home. So,
yeah.
And the photos are wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve's a great photographer.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it's Christy Laurie, C is for Cape Cod. Thanks for calling and suggesting it.
Okay, have a great day.
You
thank
too.
You.
Okay,
bye-bye.
866-999-4626 if you'd like to suggest a book with a Cape Cod or Islands theme to it. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's books with a Cape and Islands theme with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Mary Fran Buckley from Eight Cousins Bookstore in Falmouth. 866-999-4626. If you'd like to suggest a book for us, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we have this note. Have any of you read Jane's Island by Marjorie Hill Ali, set in Woods Hole in the 20s? it's a fun mystery story. So
I have heard of it, but I have not read it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You have heard of it, though. Okay. Mary Friend, what's your next book?
Okay. I'm going with a Brewster resident. She actually has 3 centuries of history in Brewster, and that's Sally Gunning. Not all of her books are about the Cape, but 2, Bound and The Widow's War, are set on the Cape. Bound is the story of a young English girl. Her impoverished, widowed father sells her into servitude, puts her on a ship to Boston, where she has a miserable life as a servant, really more of a slave, in a house. And there's nobody to regulate. It's supposed to have an end date of her servitude. Not so. She manages to escape. She is pregnant by her boss, basically, and she goes to live on Cape Cod. And it's a very good story, well done, and it does give you a nice picture of Cape Cod and where she goes to. The Widow's War takes place in 1761 in the town of Sawtucket, which was what Brewster was. It's the story of Liddy, who has been married for 20 years to a whaling captain. During his long absences, she managed the household and took care of everything, knowing in her heart that he may never return, which does, that is what happens, and her husband is lost at sea. So not only is she engulfed in grief over the loss of her husband, she finds out as a widow she is legally barred from owning property, and the property goes to the nearest male relative, who is her son-in-law, a man that she just absolutely cannot stand. She decides to challenge the law and stand up for her independence, and she pays a very high price for this. One of the interesting things at the end of the book, Sally Gunning gives a tour of Brewster, places to see. She harkens back to the days when it was Sawtucket. But it is very, very well researched. Lots of historical data.
I was going to say that Sally does amazing research. I recommend any of her books. She's fabulous, fabulous writer.
Wasn't she writing mysteries before she started? I think she wrote some mysteries. No, you're looking at me like she's,
I don't remember this.
I
haven't read.
I'll have to take a look and see.
She went down to Virginia to do Monticello. That's her latest.
But
her subjects are for the historical novels. Really, what women have to put up with and how they stand up for themselves and the hardships that they face. Yeah. Excellent books.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I discovered something that I didn't know prior to getting ready for this show, which is that Sylvia Plath spent time on Cape Cod. She spent quite a bit of time on Cape Cod. She spent 7 weeks in Eastham one summer. And in her journals, the unabridged journals of Sylvia Plath, she talks about this. And she talks about this particular day. She's talking about looking at fiddler crabs, and she writes, "Yesterday, the weird spectacle of fiddler crabs in the mud pools off Rock Harbor Creek, a mud flat at low tide, surrounded by a margin of dried, brittle marsh grass stretching away into the yellow-green salt marsh, mud damp toward center, alive with the rustle and carapace scuttle of green-black fiddler crabs, like an evil cross between spiders and lobsters and crickets, bearing one gigantic pale green claw and walking sideways." And what I learned in reading all these little bits in her diary, and which I had also not known before, is in fact the first poem she ever published in the New Yorker was called Mussel Hunter at Rock Harbor, which begins, "I came before the water colorists came to get the good of the Cape light that scours sand grit to sided crystal and buffs and sleeks the blunt hulls of the 3 fishing smacks beached on the hank of the river's backtracking tail. I'd come for free fish bait, the blue mussels clumped like bulbs at the grassroot margin of the tidal pools." It's a beautiful poem, and first was inspired by the town of Eastham.
Thank you. Mary Friend.
An all-time classic is Henry Beston's The Outermost House, A Year of Life on the Great Beach of Cape Cod. Beston was 36 when he first went to what is now known as Coast Guard Beach. He bought 50 acres of dune land and built for himself a 2-room vacation cottage. He planned to just use it like that, and in September of 1926, he went out there. He was going to stay for 2 weeks. And he says, "The fortnight ending, I lingered on. And as the year lengthened into autumn, the beauty and mystery of this earth and outer sea so possessed and held me that I could not go. He seemed to sense that out here at last he might find his full expression as a writer. So he stayed for a year till September 1927. His fiancée, she was also a writer, but she had great ambitions for him. And when he returned from his year, she was insistent. He came with notebooks filled with information, but he did not have a manuscript. He wanted to set a wedding date, and her response was, "No book, no marriage." So a year later, The Outermost House was published, and then 8 months later, they did get married. It wasn't a bestseller at first, but it has gradually gained momentum. The introduction by Robert Finch is excellent, and he says that Rachel Carson said it was the only book that influenced her writing. In 1960, it was cited as one of the motivating forces in the creation of the National Seashore, and it is now viewed as one of the classics of American nature writing. And you wonder how he would survive out there. Obviously, it's unheated. There's no electricity in the middle of winter. And he talks about the winters being very moderate. So not like the past few we've had with snowstorms, because he said the snow disappears in no time. He would go to Orleans to buy food, and he was friendly with some of the lighthouse keepers and people like that. And he did watch shipwrecks and all of that. But what he does say is that, dwelling upon these dunes, I lived in the midst of an abundance of natural life, which manifested itself every hour of the day, and from being this surrounded, thus enclosed within a great whirl of what one may call the force, I felt that I drew a secret and sustaining energy. Very beautiful writing. His wife said later that he might spend a morning working on one sentence, but the result is very beautiful writing. And it does address just the unique character of Cape Cod.
We have an email from Mary Beth who says, "The Mysteries by Cynthia Riggs," which we've already mentioned, and we didn't mention, each one has a plant in the title.
Yes.
And the sleuth, of course, is the elderly Victoria Trumbull, who's based on Cynthia's mother, her actual mother. And then we have another email from Terry who says, "Oh my gosh, I literally was looking for good books set on Cape Cod early this morning, and then here you are talking about that very subject. Wow, funny how life is. Do you happen to have a list of your recommendations on the website? My favorite book is Cape Cod by Henry David Thoreau." And yes, we will have a list, as I mentioned earlier, up a little bit later this morning. Jill has to get back to the library and put it together for us. And then we'll have a link at our website, capeandislands.org, a little later on this morning.
Right, well, Jill. And speaking of gardens, when I asked people, staff, again, this was one of the responses I got from the staff of Books on Cape Cod. And she writes, "If you're still looking for garden books, anything by C.L. Fornari would be good.
Absolutely.
Her photography is lovely, and she's all about low-stress gardening. Several of her titles mention the Cape or vineyard specifically, but my favorite is The Cocktail Hour Garden. It makes me want to sit in a fragrant, blooming garden with a cool cocktail in your hand." And she, in the intro, she talks about this, the idea of, C.L. Fornari talks about the idea of the cocktail garden, and she, "The Cocktail Hour Garden is a landscape that reminds us to put these distractions aside and be in the present moment. It's an environment that, like a strong ocean current, pulls us determinedly into the natural world and invites us to relax and better sync our rhythms to the flora and fauna around us. Whether the practice of pausing for a drink between the workday and the evening meal begin with absinthe or not, I propose that the best place to celebrate a return of the green hour is among plants in the garden. We can all use a time to pause among the surrounding greenery and count our blessings, whether it's with a cup of tea, a cocktail, or no beverage in hand at all." And this book is just full of beautiful gardens in which to drink your cocktail.
Absolutely.
Or iced tea.
I think, unfortunately, her book on planting in Cape Cod is out of print right now because we get many requests.
May I just say that's what your public library is for?
Yes, there it is.
And she also, CL also has a blog. So if you, where she writes about.
And I will also mention that tomorrow starts the Friends of Falmouth Public Library gigantic book sale, and you might
maybe it'll be
find it there as well.
Yeah. All right, Mary Fran.
We always get requests at the store from visitors. They want to have a cookbook that is reflecting of Cape Cod. And one of them that's really quite charming is Meet Me in My Cape Cod Kitchen, Recipes for Seaside Living by Linda Maria Steele. And it is, there's 60 recipes, easy. They reflect the area, a lot of seafood recipes. One quote I love in it is, one cannot think well, love well, sleep well, if one has not dined well. And that's from Virginia Woolf, and it's on the page with the black bean and corn salad. The other part is she has an ode to walking. She names her favorite walks. One is the Shining Sea Bike Path, and she has a special trail mix that she and her kids make before they walk, bring it along with them. And, of course, she has the Steele Family Super Easy Clam Chowder. But her whole purpose is gathering people for good food and good times. So that's Meet Me in My Cape Cod Kitchen by Linda Maria Steele.
I'll throw in another cookbook, A Little Taste of Cape Cod Annie Copps, which just came out.
Yep.
And we have an interview with Annie that's going to air next week, so stay tuned.
That's another one.
Yeah, she's fabulous. Okay, go ahead.
Well, and if you're just looking for a cozy mystery, I've just been told again by a staff member about a series I had never heard of before, set in a bookstore on Cape Cod. And it's primarily a Shakespeare bookstore because the owner is English, and her uncle, her grandfather, somebody gives her this bookstore. The first one is called Elementary She Read, a Sherlock Holmes bookshop mystery by Vicki Delaney, who is actually Canadian. And it talks a little bit, here's a little bit of her background from page 3 of this book. I am the half-owner, manager, head shop clerk, and chief duster of the Sherlock Holmes Bookshop and Emporium in the Cape Cod town of West London, Massachusetts, as well as reprints of the original Sir Arthur Conan Doyle books. We carry new books representing anything and everything in the pastiche or vaguely derived from the Holmes legend. From Laurie R. King's Mary Wrestle mystery series to The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime to Holmes for the Holidays and all the myriad short story collections inspired by the canon. And somebody steals one of her books in this first volume and, you know, bad things happen. But very cozy. There are three of them now. The first one is Elementary She Read. The second one is The Cat of the Baskervilles. And the third is Body on Baker Street. Really fun, light reading. There is, you know, it's a mystery. So, you know, somebody probably gets killed, you know. But other than that, it's all very sort of lighthearted. And the third one is just come out when the author of the controversial Hudson and Holmes mystery series comes to their bookshop for an author signing and winds up dead. Owners Gemma Doyle and Jane Wilson must do their best to clear the name of one of their patrons and deduce the real killer. That series is the Sherlock Holmes Bookshop Mystery Series.
I haven't heard of those, but they sound like a lot
of fun. They sound like fun, don't they?
Yeah. Mary Fran.
I did want to give a shout out to Arcadia Press and History Press. They've joined forces, and they have a whole series of books on almost every town on Cape Cod.
With great photos.
Photos I love those books. We put them out every summer. People eat them up.
And there's one on the Cape Cod Canal, whaling. They're really great. And so I'd look for them. We always stock a great number of them. And another book, and this is going out of print, is The Nature of Cape Cod by Beth Schwartzman. And it is more of environmental, biological type book, but still, it's really a very good book on the whole nature of Cape Cod, the beaches, the unique nature of our home.
Yeah, and so you snap that up before it's out of print because that is a great book to have in your library.
It's an excellent reference book.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Well, and because we mentioned it in the promo, I thought I'd better bring in Henry James here, which is his book, The Bostonians. It was made into a beautiful film, actually, directed by James Ivory in 1984. And the location of that film was Ocean Park, Oak Bluffs. In the actual novel, they go to a place called Marmion, which apparently is James' name for Marion, a small town on Buzzards Bay, which is at the southwestern end of Cape Cod, is what they're calling it. And there also is a whole section on Provincetown in here because the spurned lover goes to Provincetown at one point, and he talks about the ripeness of summer. The ripeness of summer lay upon the land, and yet there was nothing in the country Basil Ransom traversed that seemed susceptible of maturity. And so it's a lovely meditation on summer in Provincetown.
All right. And we will, again, have the list to all the books we talked about up on our website a little bit later today, capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Mary Fran Buckley from Eight Cousins Bookstore in Falmouth. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mindy. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. Mm-hmm.